This is William Dan Pilar, and this is Free For All Things Libertarian. And yes, I am not Big John, but we have a special guest tonight, and it is Big John. So why am I hosting the show? Well, this is election. We only have a few days to the election, and I wanted to bring Big John to give his libertarian takes. For y'all that don't know it, I'm a conservative, but a conservatarian, and I wanted to work with Big John. And when I approached Big John, he told me, William, I'm a libertarian. And I'm like, I can work with that. So I wanted to, this few days before the election, to get Big John's take on all things libertarian, how it concerns the election. And I said, Big John, I'm going to be the host tonight. You're going to be the guest. So everybody, welcome. Fantasy sports pioneer, a philosopher, corporate bigwig on Wall Street, Mr. John D. Georgiopoulos.
Hey, William, doing, thanks. Brother? I'm doing fine. Thanks for that rousing introduction. I'm sure much more than I deserve. Thank you. And I'm going to have to learn how to be a guest again on my own show. So I'm on the different side of the screen in our studio here. So I just have to, if you catch me looking off in the wrong direction, that's the reason why. But I love this idea you had. We're 1 week away from the election. Not 1 week, less than a week. It's coming Tuesday. And before you get started, brother, before you get started, let me do a little bit of pimping. And I just wanted to say, everyone, Tuesday night, we will be live streaming with Libertarian Party vice presidential candidate and, at this point, he told me, I'm free to say this, good friend of Free For All and Grumblings Media in general, Mike Termod. So, William, I know you Republicans are probably going to be having your watch party for Donald Trump. And it looks right now fairly, that he has a slight edge right now going in. So I'm sure you guys will be having some live watch party ready to do all those Republican Party animals. Like PJ O'Rourke used to say, but for those libertarians that want to sit through the misery, but also have some good analysis, obviously our good friend Mike Termod will be here. We have him for anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours, according to his campaign. So we're honored to have him next week. And when William, I just wanted to take a few seconds to pimp that, and I'm sure we'll do some more promotions between now and Tuesday. But for those folks, chiming in tonight, just want to make them aware of that. And obviously we're live, William, and I know I'm acting like the host a little bit right now, but we're live.
That's fine.
So if anybody's out there on YouTube, X, Rumble, Facebook, if you have any questions while William and I are chopping it up, feel free to hit us up in the comments. We'll see them here. And as long as you don't use too many four-letter words, we'll put your question up on the screen and answer it directly. That's it, William. Back to you.
There you go. All righty. And for all you Mises Caucus people, we do welcome you to check out Fired Up, the conservative show.
That's where they belong anyway.
So, Big John.
Yes.
What are your feelings, and just your general overall feelings before we get into some specifics going into this week in terms of the election itself, but also how you see the Libertarian Party doing? And you don't have to stick to just the presidentials, but across the board, how do you see this happening, breaking down in the nation?
Yeah. So look, I think what's happening now is we're in the stretch run, obviously in terms of time, but it's also in terms of campaign nonsense. I see it coming from the Harris campaign. I see it coming from the Trump campaign. The minor bickering, because I think everyone at this point understands no one's going to convince anyone who's undecided on issues. I think that's the time for that is long gone. And I think Americans, honestly, for the most part, don't vote on issues anymore. You have single issue voters that align, I think, with every party, William. Like if you're pro-abortion, you'll vote for Harris. If you're anti-abortion, you used to vote for Trump. I don't know if that's still the case, but let's say for Trump, it might be anti-immigration or anti-illegal immigration. That becomes a single issue vote for the Trump folks, or like get us out of Ukraine, stuff like that. But there's nobody who's undecided who says, I haven't made up my mind on the Ukraine. I haven't made up my mind on abortion. There's nobody like that at this stage of the game. At this stage of the game, I think if there's any mitigating factors for either candidate, either major party candidate, it's going to be based on character. Like at the last second, is one of them going to say something to offend you personally if you're a voter? Is one of them going to say something that makes fun of someone you care about? I think that's what happens between now and Tuesday, and we're starting to see it, right?
Well, let me tell you this, John.
Go ahead. Yeah.
There are undecided voters out there, 3%, according to the data. Now, I served in the military, so I can speak anecdotally from my experience. There are a lot of guys, it's election? Oh, hell, who do I vote for? And that's when the friends come in. You got to vote this guy, that guy. But, you know, this is the lowest number I've ever heard of undecided being 3%. I think that has to do with technology. Do you think technology has changed the way we look at candidates? Like, for example, I think in the long run, the Libertarian Party has a chance to grow here if they manage to harness technology. And as I learned, there's as much infighting with the Libertarian Party as there are the other two parties. But what are your thoughts on that? Do you think the Libertarian Party can grow? Do you think technology has changed the quality of the candidates?
Oh, see, at the last second, you threw a screwball at me, William. I was just about to enter on technology, but then you said, how does it affect the quality of the candidates?
Technology brings these people to us now.
Right. And I think you had me answering one way and then you kind of shifted on me. Okay. So technology, yes, absolutely technology has affected the way we vote. We learn about the candidates. Absolutely. No doubt about that. It's like asking me, did radio have an effect when it came around on newspapers? Did TV have an effect on radio when it came around? Yes, of course. Social media, the internet has had an effect. Now, is that good? Yes. The more people who have more access to more information? Absolutely. But how has it affected the quality of candidate, I think, is even more interesting. Right now, I think the level of pandering, especially from the major parties, has to grow. It has to grow because now you're constantly worried about how a niche group will react to anything that's put out about you on social media. So is the quality of candidate getting better or worse? Well, do you want someone who governs or makes up his mind or her mind based on, in essence, opinion polls, instantaneous opinion polls? Because listen, when Bill Clinton ran his administration by opinion polls, right? He had to wait. You had to wait a couple of months to see what the results of your actions were, right? Oh, right. I took action X. I got to wait 3 months. The pollsters will run out. They'll figure it out. We'll get the opinions of the American people. Then we'll come together. We'll see how they react. And then I'll adjust based on that, right? Now it's like, right? It happens right away. What happened on Twitter? What happened on Facebook? What happened on TikTok? What happened on, you know, depending on your media of choice? And what's worse is, again, because of the way the algorithms work technically, each platform becomes its own echo chamber. So obviously we know about the leftist bias in a lot of algorithms, right? Like whether it's Google or Facebook. But on X...
Right, John, for the audience... she's not approaching Obama 95%, but she's at approximately 85% positive coverage by the media. Trump is at like 75% or 85%, about the same in terms of negative versus positive. So it's not a perceived bias. Real quick on the echo chamber, do you think because of technology, the echo chamber has extended to non-technology, meaning before you could have a conversation with your loved one, your friend on politics? But now, because of technology, do you think even that's gone away? Because how tribalistic technology has made our society become that you can't even have a face-to-face conversation at a bar or with a family member?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that part has gone away, to be honest with you. I think that's way overblown. All those memes about, you know, another Thanksgiving ruined by Trump, another Thanksgiving ruined by Harris. You know, I don't much buy into that. What I think it has done, though, is it's just made these ridiculous arguments more available to people who really haven't thought them through. So do people still get together to discuss politics? Absolutely. However, are those arguments... Yes.
Have you with your friends or family? I mean,
all the,
that
all
aren't
time.
Libertarian?
All the wow, time. Yeah,
see, I have it. But then again, I live from home.
Listen, you and I both know. Yeah, and I live down here in my office myself. But there's only one person. I can honestly say that since in the last maybe since Obama's first election. So when was that? 2008?
Yes. 2012 was his last election.
Right. But I mean, he started running in 2008, right, which correct, is when, correct. And he was the first president to really leverage social media to his advantage for fundraising and messaging. And, right. And ever since that, like, if you took that as a starting point, I can honestly say I stopped talking to just one close friend over those years over politics that originated over social media. You and I both know the guy I stopped talking to. And after several years, I came to the realization that I was at fault. I was the one who let it get to me. I'm the one who let it get the better
of me. Oh, yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yes.
I went to that person. I asked for his forgiveness to be very humble. And I apologized. And I said, look, I should have never reacted the way I did. I apologize for not speaking to you all these years. And to his great credit, that guy said, I accept your apology. And, you know, it never happened as far as I'm concerned. So,
right.
You know, and that says a lot on his character too, you know, that he was able to accept my what I truly meant to be a sincere apology. But generally speaking, I can talk to anybody for any length of time. I can argue very vociferously about my opinions, but at the end of the day, I'll just say to myself, is this worth losing a friend over? And in 99.9% of those conversations, the answer is no. I'd rather have the friend than the vote, so to speak. So
is no, that I everybody? Agree. I agree.
I don't know, to be honest.
No, it's not. To the viewers out there, Big John is that type of guy who, if somebody has a problem with him, you look at that guy and you go, if you got a problem with Big John, odds are you're at fault. He's one of those few rare breeds. And you should hear us at times off camera. And then we stop talking, then we get back to business. Hey, what about this video? What about this? So yes, Big John is extremely nice. So Big John, let's get back to the libertarian take here. Give me your thoughts on Mr. Chase Oliver and Mike Termaugh. Both are friends of the show. You're really clicking with Mr. Termaugh. But give me your honest, unvarnished opinion here. How has their campaign, first of all, to the audience, I have been watching politics intensely and been involved in them since 2015. What Oliver and Termaugh did was shrewd. It was politics at its best in them. It was like, what was that show with the guy who got in trouble for messing around with
You're talking
House
about
of Cards?
House of Cards, yeah.
House of Cards worthy and how they took over that and won the nomination. Everything was lined up against them. But since then, what's been your take on how they've run their campaign?
Well, I think they've run a very professional campaign, for lack of a better term, right? I think that you can't point to anything they've done or said that paints them as buffoons. I don't think they've made mistakes. Now, I'm not talking about policy, right? People can have disagreements on policy. I'm talking about the actual operation of the campaign.
You're talking about gas, screw-ups, you know, saying the wrong thing at the right wrong time, et cetera.
Yeah, honestly, I haven't seen any of that out of them. They've also, they're constantly on the road. Like their campaign managers, Amber and Gabby, you know, I constantly text with them. Hey, can I grab Chase for 10 minutes? Can I talk to Mike for, always, no matter what time it is, they'll always get back to me. Not that I'm anybody important. I think I'm insignificant in the grand scheme of things, but, they're in 50, you know, they've hit all 50 states. I'm not 100% sure, but I think Mike may have even gone to Puerto Rico to campaign, you know, just, you know, get out there.
Just wasn't taking the trash out?
Exactly. I was going to say, maybe he was just taking the trash out. But, you know, I think
for the audience, don't get mad at Big John. Yo soy Puerto Rican, so I can say that. Go ahead.
Right.
Got a cover for you there.
But thank you, brother. So I think they've run a very professional campaign. Now, how successful has the campaign been? How will that translate into votes for the LP? It's an entirely different question because, as we all know, they've been hamstrung by their own party, by their own leadership, right? So if you're asking for a prediction, I think...
Well, let's go there. I'm tapping my question to ask you next as a follow-up, but you walked right into it. So the goal appears to be, the banished number for libertarians, at least looking at it from my perspective, seems to be 1%, meaning... If they hit 1%, to me, based on, and I've been following the Libertarian Party people as a conservatarian, it seems to me like if they hit 1%, that's a big win in their internal battle. If they don't hit it, what are your thoughts on what that means?
Right. So let me take that in two parts. The first part is, you're right. I think 1% for this year is the goal. The goal is to win, but In realistic terms, 1% is the goal. Will they hit that 1%? It's going to be close. Like, I'm still not convinced. Our good friend Larry Sharp here in New York has told me, John, if they hit 0.5%, I'd be surprised. They may end up fifth this year. It could happen. But again, from what I'm seeing anecdotally, as much as there's been pushback by leadership against Chase Oliver, both tangible pushback and philosophical pushback. Personally, I think the campaign's going very well. They have not accepted money from the LNC at all, from what my understanding is. They are not part of that RFK co-fundraising scheme that the LNC came up with. Because, you know, when I spoke to Chase, when I spoke to Mike, they both said, we're not convinced that that is entirely legal, what's going on there, and that there may be sanctions down the road. So we want no part of it as a campaign, right? So they have not accepted any money. That's why when you go to a Chase Oliver campaign event, they literally have his assistant, I forget his name right now, he's running around with the laptop like, would you like to make a donation? We accept Bitcoin, we accept gold, whatever you got, we'll take it, right? So if you look at the fundraising numbers, Todd Hagopian, the former LNC secretary, up until this last term, when last convention, when he got, I think he resigned. He says the fundraising is down. So the question is the fundraising down because Chase and Mike are a bad team, or is the fundraising down because, quite honestly, they've been crapped on by their own leadership? I don't know. I think it's more the former than the latter. More the latter than the former.
What about this thought process? Part of it's down for whatever reason, but it seems like a big part of the Libertarian Party, the Mises Caucus, and their base, instead of giving the money that would traditionally go to the Libertarian Party, they instead first gave it to RFK Jr. and then since then are giving it RFK Jr. / Trump. Do you think that siphoned off some of the money? And for the audience out there, we're not talking a big mass amount of money. And the reason I say that is I believe after this is said and done, Big John, if they find one donor who believes in them, they can make up that money. The problem is it's just the two big parties just suffocate everything. But well, again, going back to technology, right. I think the opening is there for somebody to go, I've had it with both these parties, because they are alienating some people. Maybe that's the LP's benefit. So, my question to you, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that if you go by sustaining members, if you go by donations to the LP, not necessarily to the Oliver Termott campaign, but to the national organization, all that's been down since the Mises Caucus took over in 2022. Right. That's been down. You throw into it all the legal troubles they've had. Like, they're constantly getting sued by their own membership because they're taking these really... and I guess some people in the Mises Caucus might even consider this a compliment, they're taking really radical approaches to stuff, right? And to the point where...
Yeah, there's radical. I will defend you here, Big John. Yeah. If I was a Libertarian Party member, I would probably align more with the Mises. But from what I've seen, they're not taking radical approaches. And I'm not here to crap on anybody, but they seem to be doing, just making some dumb, stupid moves, ignorant of the law. Now, each Secretary of State will interpret that a certain way, and they may be fine. But on the surface, it's like, really? Why? Well, it's like you're asking for trouble.
Yeah, I didn't mean radical in terms of politics, right? I didn't mean that. I didn't mean like, oh, they're anarchists. We get that. They're anarchists. They don't even believe in a political party, really, right? So I'm not referring to that when I say radical. What I meant is there's a reason why no political party invites its opponent to their convention, to their nominating convention, right? There's a reason why the sitting chair of the GOP or the sitting chair of the DNC doesn't come out and say, hey, if you're in a state that's going to vote, let's say you're who's at the head of the RNC right now, William?
Well, Laura is co-chair, Laura Trump. So I don't
Laura
know who
Trump.
The other one is.
So let's use Laura Trump as an example, right? Laura Trump doesn't sit around and say, hey, if you're a Republican in New York or a Republican in California, why don't you go ahead and vote for Chase Oliver? Have you ever heard?
And you know, Joe, that's a damn good point. And here's what I want your audience to know, because yeah. We deal with similar battles in the Republican Party. However, if you are an actual member of the party, the governing party, you have an official role. You have an obligation to your nominated candidate. Now, I will defend Dave Smith, who is a Mises Caucus believer and leader, when he tells people, you got to vote for who you believe in, because he's not attached to the party leadership. But if you're attached to the party, then you should resign if you choose not to support your endorsed candidate. Because one day, this is what I tell everybody. You like these ugly decisions, these terrible, these unethical decisions today. Tomorrow, those decisions can go against you. That's why having some form of law and order is so important. So well, I think that is a massive failing here in leadership
from the party. And for people who may not be aware what I'm referring to, like I have some tweets and pictures here to share with people. So let me see if I can pull those up for you there, William. So right here. Here's a picture of this is the head of the Libertarian National Committee, Angela McArdle. On occasion, I may slip and may refer to her as Angela McGrift. That is entirely unintentional, by the way, I assure you. However, here's a picture of her. William, you may not think so, but I see her as being looking at Trump with a loving gaze.
She's enamored of him.
That is unbelievable over there.
You're right. But John, doesn't she look like Kat Tiff in that picture too?
At a very big distance. Yeah, you're right. Look, I'm not a Republican. I would take Kat Tiff over her.
No, Kat Tiff is a libertarian, isn't
right.
she?
Right. She's actually a libertarian. But so you have this is the head of the LNC, folks. This is the person who came out and said, if you're in a battleground state, vote for Trump. If you're in a state where it might be going for Harris, don't vote for Harris, vote for Chase Oliver. In other words, she's clearly in the bag for Trump. There is no doubt about it. You mentioned Dave Smith. Dave Smith was the leading presidential candidate, choice for the Mises Caucus. He was their guy. They wanted him to run for president under the LP banner. So I do consider him a leader of sorts, right? He announces on Twitter, I've been a member of the Libertarian Party since 2018, as if that's forever. Do you know what I mean? He says, I've been there since 2018, as if 6 years, it makes him some sort of long-suffering veteran. Do you know what I mean? But anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. You guys have been suffering since 1974.
Yeah, right. I've been suffering since who knows when. But my point is, he says, as I have stated over and over again, I am not loyal to the party. Party loyalty is stupid, and it's particularly ridiculous from libertarians. Now, a couple of things about that. He's right, because I've said on occasion, you should follow your principles, follow your own personal integrity. I am aligned with him on that. However, I wouldn't follow my integrity if it means sinking the party that is viewing me as a leader, to your point, right? Amash, for whatever you think of Amash, he said, the Libertarian Party has now turned into a party of alt-right people. I'm not going to stay here. I'm going back to the Republicans and run as a Republican with the same positions. You may say that's disloyalty or whatever, but he's not hanging around the Libertarian Party actively trying to sink it. Dave Smith is telling you, I'm a member of the Libertarian Party. Go vote for Trump. I'm
right,
a member.
Right. John, that's okay with him because he's not an official member. But I get what you're saying, and I agree with you. My issue with him is...
I'm not done. Here's another one. I'm sorry, William.
I'm sorry.
Here's Michael Heiss. We've got to make that a little bigger, brother. Okay, here. Michael Heiss, who has started what he calls a media company called Dissident Media. And as John Hudak over at Fakeitarian says, it's just a Twitter account, but he's calling it Dissident Media, right? The same type of article as the one Smith sent out, why I'm voting for Trump. Again, this is the founder of the Modern Mises Caucus. This is the guy who is the mastermind, and I will give credit where credit is due. He was smart enough to take money from MAGA and surreptitiously take over the LP in 2022. They started in 2018. And he was the one who organized the takeover. He's the one who registered MAGA Republicans in various locales to be able to take over the party via delegates. Brilliant. I give credit to him and Patrick Byrne, who was the former CEO of Overstock.com. Patrick Byrne is of interest to Republicans. He was the guy who led a lot of the challenges to Trump's loss in 2020 in Arizona. I think he was also involved in Georgia. I'm not 100. Fact check me on that, but definitely in Arizona, maybe in Georgia as well. He was, you know, providing money, providing legal assistance, things like that, and strategy. Heiss accepted, and Heiss bragged about this. Hudak, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, was another Mises founder, says he has screenshots from a private Discord server where Heiss gets on and goes, hey, I just collected $50,000 from Patrick Byrne to bring up the Mises Caucus. And that's when he started bringing in other characters. So,
John,
from the,
let me ask you a question, though. Let me push back. I don't want to push back, but this is a question is, so I get what you're saying about Amash or Ron Paul or Massey. They're running as Republicans, but they maintain for the most part their libertarian beliefs.
And they never hurt the Libertarian Party. That's the other thing. Maybe
that's my pushback.
Yeah.
If you want to grow your party and you're running as a Republican, you have no shot of changing anything. We saw Ron Paul for 20 years not change one damn thing. But right. He sure made a lot of money. And I'm not saying he's a grifter. I'm saying, as an outsider looking at the Libertarian Party, and John and I have talked about this off camera, my belief is there's kind of like in the WNBA, they just fired Chrissy Sides. When Magic Johnson, his first coach, Paul Westphal, was fired, LeBron's first coach was fired a year and a half or halfway in the season. They call those transitional people.
Right.
Unless you have some transitional people in the Libertarian Party, it's never going to grow. So I kind of view it, well, Ron Paul, Justin Amash, even Paul Rand, his son, Paul Rand.
Rand Paul.
Thank you. It's like, it seems like they want to think more for themselves and leave the Libertarian Party high and dry. I'm asking you, am I wrong looking at it?
No, you're not wrong. Would I have loved Justin Amash to have hung around and run for president as part of the LP this year? Absolutely, I would have loved that. And I was disappointed that he left. But at the same time, once he made the decision that the LP had moved, did not align with him anymore, and he felt he was more aligned with a conservative Republican, say, I think that's what he believes. So I'm willing to accept his word on that. I'm willing to accept his word on that. So when he came to that decision, he said, I'm leaving the LP. I'm not bad mouthing them. I'm not staying here and telling them to vote for Republicans. I'm not staying here and telling them to vote for Democrats. I'm leaving. Fair enough. Disappointed, but fair enough. The difference with a Dave Smith or a Michael Heiss or an Angela McCardle is they're still in the LP. Like when Dave Smith put that long tweet I just showed you,
That's what you meant by you still view Dave Smith as a leader. And that's even though he has no position, by de facto, it's like Trump has been the last 4 years. By de facto, he's the leader.
Yeah, if you were a member of the Mises Caucus, like Heiss and McCardle, since at least 2020, I would say, if not sooner, Dave Smith was the guy they wanted to run. They were grooming him to run. And even Dave Smith says, he had to pull out for personal reasons. Again.
Yeah.
No, guys.
Let me put my two cents on this. Is I don't think he pulled. Look, Dave Smith is one of the best debaters I have seen in this new era. He is to debates what I was to fantasy sports. I could go on the radio for an hour and just bam, bam, bam. That's how good Dave Smith is. He destroyed Chris Cuomo. If you guys have never seen that debate, go watch it. But I believe Dave Smith wants his cake and wants to eat it too. He sees the turmoil, all these problems. And he knows once he gets into the party politics, what happens? You're actually taking a side. By being on the outside looking in, he can have the best of both worlds. It's kind of like the guy who's not in power or the backup quarterback. The grass is always greener on the other side. And he's right in a position now to do very well, both financially and grow his brand and still be seen as a libertarian leader. Does that make sense in what I'm trying to say?
No, it makes sense. But I'm saying I'll even give him the benefit of the doubt. I know I think it's public knowledge. He had a child who had some medical issues and he needed to focus on that. He needed to focus on his family. Hey man, much respect. Okay. In that regard. Now I'll take him at his word. I have no reason not to take him at his word. Right. But taking him at his word, then the reason Mike Rechtenwald became the endorsed candidate of the Mises Caucus, who, by the way, now that he's lost, Rechtenwald has turned into a raving anti-Semite on Twitter, by the way. And I'm
I haven't seen the racist part, but I've seen the really I don't like Jews part. I was like, whoa, because you know, Big John, I met every single candidate at the California convention. Except for Chase Oliver. He was not there. Right. But, boy, it's like they all were really nice, professional, but you saw that I don't know the word to describe him. And I'm not saying there was something off, but he does have this air about him that
he's comes angry. With being a he's college angry. Professor. Yeah, he's angry. Gotcha. And look, here's a tweet. I pulled it up real quick. Somebody posted, random person said, what's the biggest threat facing Western civilization today? Rechtenwald's unsarcastic remark is Judaism. Right? Or Judaicism. Yeah, Judaicism. My point is, that's just one example. There's a lot more unsavory stuff. But my point is, look, I interviewed Rechtenwald. I gave him a full hour and a half. We talked. I thought he was intelligent. He came off like he came off angry, but I gave him – I cut him slack because of what he went through at NYU, how he was
the victim of censorship. Well, he is very intelligent. You got to give him credit. The man's not dumb. He's very intelligent.
No, he's intelligent, but he's also angry because of the way they treated him at NYU, which is they censored him. They tried to kick him off campus. They tried to take his tenure, right? He was the victim of political correctness, okay? So I was very sympathetic to his case. But as now that he's no longer the preferred candidate, he doesn't feel the need to watch what he says anymore. And it's very obvious that he has a lot of problems with everything. And as many people have pointed out, Rechtenwald started as a Marxist, then he became a Trump supporter, then he became an anarchist. So it just makes you wonder what's next and how much of this does he believe and how much of it is just contrarian? I don't know. But this is the Mises Caucus now. Right, it's all these
guys. Educate me, John. Educate me, because what you just said, anecdotally, that's what I hear a lot from people before they turn to the Libertarian Party. Yeah, I was a Marxist, socialist. I mean, Thomas Sowell, Marxist. You know, and he does not call himself conservative. He calls himself a libertarian. You know, I've heard that tale before.
Right, there's a lot of people who have had what I think were sincere, either revelations or a crisis of conscience, right? So if you look back when Marxism was running rampant in the U.S., say in the 20s and 30s, right?
Right. Communism and Marxism.
There were a lot of intellectuals, who went along with Marxism. There always is, right? And a lot of those intellectuals, look at the Whitaker Chambers thing, where he said Whitaker Chambers was, he ended up being the editor, I think, of either Newsweek or Time at some point in that era. But Whitaker Chambers used to be a communist spy working, and his base of operations was basically Columbia University.
Oh, wow.
Right? And Whitaker Chambers was the one who then had a crisis of conscience and said, he wrote a book called Witness. And I think one of the most chilling passages in there is when he describes how he left Marxism, he said, "One night, I couldn't stop hearing the screams. The screams would not stop." Meaning, at some point, the enormity of what communism was doing, the murder right. of innocent people, it got to him. And he said, "I couldn't turn off those screams in my head." And that's when he became a conservative at the time, right?
Right.
Thomas Sowell. You know, for some people, the awakening is economic, right? For some people, you're a Marxist until you get that first paycheck in your first job, and 40% of it is missing if you live in New York or California, and you're like, wait a second, where did it all go? Well, it went to all those nice socialist and Marxist programs you loved so much in college, right? So for some people, it's economics. For some people, it's philosophical. For some people, it's even personal, right? Like someone mugged them on the street, or they weren't allowed to defend themselves, right? But it's very rare. It's very so when you see someone who has a very defined moment, like Reagan, it went from being a Democrat to a Republican in 1960, I think.
I went through the same thing.
Yeah.
In college, I had my epiphany. But you know, John, I didn't see anything about this in Witness, that movie with Harrison Ford. None of this was in that movie.
It's not the same movie, but okay.
So we get that. So I want to get back, though, to this election to get your input. And I apologize about that. But just we said 1% is the magic number, it appears.
It's not a magic number. It's a goal. It's a goal.
A goal. Okay, a goal.
Yeah.
It's a goal. So let's say Oliver and Termite hit 1%. The party's controlled by Mises caucus right now, but that's a massive blow. I guess what I'm asking you is, give me your thoughts on where, with all the turmoil, all the internal battles, where do you see the Libertarian Party? Well, first of all, we kind of know how they're holding up right now. They've all kind of done the switch over to Trump, et cetera. You kind of talked about that. But where do you see them going after this?
That's a great question.
And I got a follow-up to that afterwards.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd like to think we're going to use the Mises language, we're going to purge the undesirables. And I use that phrase very specifically because a lot of their alt-right goons use that language when they talk about non-whites moving into New Hampshire, for example. You know, send them off to the woods, physically remove them, spit on them, hit them. These are the people who are calling themselves libertarians. I think what's going to happen is a lot of them have already been outed. Their leadership has been outed. Angela McArdle, Michael Heiss, who's still a paid consultant of the LNC, by the way. The number I heard, again, it may or may not be accurate, he has a $100,000 consulting contract with the LNC, which is run by Angela McArdle.
Back on that, Big John. Only that's pretty natural in politics today.
Fair enough.
I get your point.
Yeah.
It was done under the table. And that's the other thing. I mean, I hate that across all parties.
So those people, Dave Smith to a certain extent, to a large extent rather, that guy, even the guy who ran to be vice president instead of Termod at the convention, Clint Russell, the guy who does Liberty Lockdown, right?
Toad!
All those guys that do that Toad podcast, what is it called? I forget what that podcast is called, whatever. But all those guys, they're all voting for Trump. Big surprise, isn't it? Like, all the people that all along the, quote, regular libertarians have saying are MAGA shills, isn't it amazing? Right now, they're all voting for Trump. They've all, and basically, their announcements about voting for Trump all came out around the same day. They all have the same structure. It's almost like it's coordinated, you know? And here's the talking points. This is why we're voting for Trump. And I say to myself, okay, why would a libertarian vote for Trump? I'm still waiting for the answer. Now, I'm not here to debate his positions with someone who sincerely is voting
pushback.
For him.
That's my pushback, yeah. Big John, is not pushback, but that triggered me in this wrong word in today's politics.
Yeah, right.
It made me think. If that's what I mean by voting for Ron Paul, Justin Amash, Thomas Massie. It's like, well, if you truly believe in the Libertarian Party, as you're alluding to, vote for the Libertarian Party candidate. But what makes it so? And I'm not looking for a fight, but it's a legit question. Trump is not a Libertarian. I don't want anybody to think I'm trying to say he is. He's not. But Ron Paul, Massey, toss that out that they're Libertarians because they're in the Republican Party running as Republicans. So why is it okay for Libertarians to vote for them? But not Trump is my question to you.
Well, it's the policy positions, more than anything else, right? Like, here's the irony, right?
I buy that. I won't vote for a rhino.
No, and I know you won't, which is why I know you would understand what I was saying, right? But here's someone we've had on the show before, Karen Ann Harlows, who I honestly think they may have expelled her. From the LNC as secretary, but at the time
redheaded she's libertarian,
the pink hair, not the redheaded one. She's the one with Tim Cast.
Oh, that's right.
She's the pink hair, Lady Liberty. She had a tweet, which was hilarious. She goes, "Economically illiterate libertarians or those with TKS Trump kink syndrome have lost all their brain cells over tariffs. Most embarrassing for those associating with a caucus named after an economist." That detailed this out, meaning Mises himself in his writing said tariffs are horrible. No libertarian, no true anarchist would be pro tariff, whether it's one-sided, unilateral, bilateral. Tariffs are an instrument of war. Okay. And you have all these Mises people saying, yay, Trump. Tariff those Chinese. Yeah. What's his name? Clint Lockdown, Russell, whatever his name is. Can someone honestly tell me? I'm not looking for a fight, but can someone honestly tell me why tariffs are bad? Well, why don't you look to the guy who in the caucus that you're named after? Mises said no libertarian economist has ever said, to my knowledge, like whether you're talking about Milton Friedman, Mises, Rothbard, anybody, there is no such thing as a libertarian tariff ever.
Right. Gotcha.
Right?
Gotcha.
Okay. So what about Trump? Are you pro Trump about if you claim to be a libertarian? It's certainly not his immigration policies. Right.
Okay. We get your point. I just want to keep this moving here for the audience's sake. And the reason I cut him off is because we agree with him. It's policies. It doesn't matter if it's immigration. John's example was tariffs. It's policy. By policy, Trump is not a libertarian. Massey is to me the most libertarian.
Absolutely. That's
running, more so than Amash. And he's a big help to libertarians. Even as a Republican, he still works and talks to libertarians. Okay, so the next angle I want to take at you is, what about these individuals who say, we're hitting rock bottom. We're getting a Democrat Party that wants to take our First Amendment away, our guns away. They've already jailed people. For whatever reason you may disagree with the philosophy, they're jailing people. They're politically persecuting people. They're coming out and saying, your classic voting for third party is a wasted vote. I'm seeing that a lot on X as well. And real quick, your comment about the individual saying what was the term you used? His anti-government, whatever it was. You're saying it's only an X account. Brother, that's an account. He's reaching people. Don't be knocking your guy there. I mean, Thomas Paine had a little old 200 pamphlets he printed out, but that made headway. So they wouldn't be running people off X if it wasn't effective. I can't remember the name of the guy yet, but just give that guy some props in terms of fighting the battle, even if it's just through X. So going back to the question, what about the fact that somebody will say, hey, Big John, I'm a libertarian, but we're at crossroads here right now. And a vote here is a wasted vote.
Yeah, my answer to that is what's always been my answer to that ever since I had my revelation in 1996. You know, yes, I'm that old. Dave Smith, Mr. I've been in the Libertarian Party since 2018. Yeah, In 1996, I had my revelation. Now, prior to 1996, I considered myself a Goldwater Republican, right? A Goldwater conservative. That's how I would have identified myself back then. Meaning, even though I didn't know the word at the time, I was a libertarian within the Republican Party because Goldwater was my guy. Like, he was like, if I don't care if they're gay or not, what was that? I don't care if they're gay or straight. As long as they can shoot straight, I want them in the army. Right. That was his thing. He had famously, he was pro-choice when every other Republican, it was a death sentence to be a Republican politician, being pro-choice. Right. So he was pro-choice at the time, being a senator out of Arizona. He was famously someone who said, if we're not going to win the war in Vietnam, get everybody out. We have no business being there. Right. So he had a lot of libertarian ideas. And even though in my mind, I didn't formulate them, I didn't call them libertarian, those always appealed to me. In 1996, when I looked at Dole versus Clinton, I was like, oof, God.
I was too.
Right. And I said, and it occurred to me, voting for the lesser of two evils just puts off the inevitable evil. It never fails. It never fails. And I always tell everyone, if you think this is the most important election in history, you're wrong. They're all the most important elections in history. Everyone says that. When Obama was running in 2008, well, and what did I hear? Yeah, we don't like Romney or we don't like McCain. But guess what? This is the most important election in history because this is going to be the first black socialist to be president. We can't let that happen. It's the most important. I've been hearing that my entire adult life. It's always most important election in history.
You're right. But there's always a tipping point because I'm with you. I'm like every cycle. When I started seeing them locking people up, when I started seeing them letting the revolving door with criminals, when I started seeing them let illegals take over apartment complexes, all this happened. It's to me, that was a tipping point. And to me, that's what does make this the most important election. Now, that said, it seems the stakes keep getting higher and higher in terms of we, the law abiding good person, having to pay higher taxes, having to watch what we say. So I'll just toss that out there. But I get what you're saying, because you're right. They do say that every cycle. This is the one cycle I actually believe it, you know, because when people were saying that about Obama, I was like, this guy's making a lot of promises. You know?
I never have. Right. And Dave Smith screaming about nuclear war and stuff like that.
Yeah. But that's like, over the top.
I'll be honest with you. To me, that's not that he'll ever listen to this podcast, but that's someone being a child. That's an adult child to me, right? We've been living with the specter of nuclear war ever since 1948. It's just been what it's like. Does Dave Smith honestly think we're closer to nuclear war now than we were during the Cuban Missile Crisis?
No. But I think if Iran gets a nuclear capability, then I'm not saying they would launch a weapon, but Trump was able to not start a war because a lot of world leaders like, man, we don't know what this guy's going to do. That's how I look at Iran. Okay, no, so we get that point.
There is that, right? But my point also is for people saying it's a wasted vote as well.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Right. The wasted vote thing, I think, is the one that completely doesn't make sense to me. Because if you really think your vote is wasted, here's Big John's advice to you. Stay home. Don't vote. If you think you're voting for a third party is wasted, if you really believe that, then stay home. Don't vote. Your lack of voting sends a stronger message than you capitulating and saying, well, I don't really like Trump or I don't really like Harris. And by the way, there's also some of the classical liberal caucus,
yeah.
Right, like Josh Echol, who have left that caucus, started something else, and now they're voting for Harris. Again, you don't hear
John,
as much.
I got to push back. Did I not call what that kid was from day one?
You absolutely did. Props to you. But again, my point is, he left the party. We don't talk about them as much because he left the party. He didn't stay behind.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't stay behind and say, hey, If you're a libertarian who hates Trump, here's what you're supposed to do. Stay libertarian, vote for Harris, and then where you're in, if you're in like Texas where they're going to vote for Trump anyway, then vote for Chase Oliver. He didn't stay behind.
No, you're right. You're right. But I always thought he was a liberal from day one, not a classical liberal, a Democrat liberal. Okay, so John, the final, and these aren't pushback. These are legit issues facing your party. The final caveat, and there's no right or wrong answer, and I say this because he may or he may not. So let's take it from two angles, because I know the angle you want to take, but I want you to take it from this angle. What if Trump keeps his promise and installs a libertarian into his a key position in his administration? I don't remember if he said he would appoint them to his cabinet or a key position. I want to say cabinet, but I can't quite remember. My research shows he said cabinet. What if he keeps that promise?
Well, it depends.
I can see Thomas Massey. I mean, if I'm Thomas Massey, I would not join this cabinet only because he's got a bright future. And once you kind of leave, it's tough to go back to Congress, you know?
That's also, if you're closely
Massey there.
Right. So look, it all depends on the libertarian. If it turns out being Vivek Ramaswamy, that guy's not a libertarian. He's a nationalist. And there's no such thing as a libertarian nationalist. So when Vivek runs around calling himself a libertarian nationalist, when those rubes in New Hampshire, like Jeremy Kaufman, run around saying we need libertarian nationalism, there's no such thing. That's like a meat-eating vegetarian. It doesn't exist. You're just putting words together so you confuse people, right? So if Trump says,
"Oh man, there's vegetarian meat now, brother."
If Vivek is the guy he's got in mind, because Vivek has been, let's face it, a Trump sycophant. He's been a Trump attack dog on the campaign trail, without a doubt. Trump has Vivek has been one of his most effective messengers. He's a person of color. He's well spoken. He's wealthy. He doesn't care who he attacks. And unlike Trump, he actually speaks in a manner that's conducive to someone in politics, in public life. Right. So if Vivek's the guy, it means nothing to me that he picked Vivek.
I agree with you, brother. That I do agree. To me, to keep that promise. Now, that said, I think the Mises caucus would be like, but
yeah, because to be a
true libertarian, you only have a couple, and Massey's the only one I can think of.
Well, it would be Massey or Rand Paul. Like, if you're talking about Republicans who are, and again, Rand Paul to me is he's a libertarian for a Republican, but he's not a libertarian, in my opinion.
He's a conservatarian. He's a conservative.
Yeah, that's what I said. He's a libertarian as a Republican, right? But my guess is if he actually follows through, by the way, he would pick either Massey or Rand Paul. I'd be like, okay. Like his threats to put Elon into government, I think, like I know a lot of people are like, woo, he's a libertarian too. No, he's not. And putting Elon in there is something that, again, a Republican would love. A libertarian looks at it and says, why are we cheering an Elon? It just worked out that he gave you a place to yell at in X, right?
I gotta be honest, Big John. I'm not an Elon fan in terms. He used a lot of tax dollars to become a billionaire. But I will give Elon his props. I think he's looking at this from he comes from South Africa. People forget that. He sees what's happening. I think Elon doesn't care what party people associate with it. I think he's looking at it from a freedom and from a business standpoint. And I'm okay with that. As far as philosophy, I'm like, put him in a business type role, meaning where he can let the economy pull government out of the economy. Government.
Government. Right. And it's, to me, it's also who's a troll, who gets where they are by being a troll and someone who's thoughtful, right? Like Massey plays the media game well, but I don't view him as a troll. I think he's someone who's thoughtful and I think he's solid. Rand Paul, the same thing, right? But what's interesting to me is that the so-called Mises caucus, who's like simping for Trump or simping for RFK, it goes against their own philosophies. Like we already saw Karen Ann, who left the Mises caucus, by the way. And by the way, so have a lot of OCMC Mises caucus guys. They've left now. They said, this is untenable. Like you guys no longer believe in the original mission of the Mises Caucus. So they've left, right? But like we already said, guys like Mises, anarchist economists would never have supported Trump ever. And who's the one god of the Mises Caucus that's still alive, William? Who's the one god of the Mises Caucus?
Ron Paul.
Ron Paul, exactly. Well, let's see what Ron Paul had to say about supporting Trump.
The biggest beef is that from a libertarian viewpoint, there is absolutely no difference meaningful difference between Hillary and Trump. I mean, they both support military-industrial complex, the Federal Reserve, deficits, entitlements, invasion of our privacy, and nationalistic populism versus socialism, and that's
right. So I apologize there for it started a little bit, but basically, who's
the chick with the glasses? She looked pretty good.
Yeah, she's some sort of reporter on CNN at the time. But that was Ron Paul saying, like, hey. And look, this was in 2016, I think, that clip is from.
Right.
He basically said, he got it right. He goes, he's a nationalist populist. That's not a slur, by the way. It's a description. He's a national populist referring to Trump, and he referred to Hillary as a socialist. That's Ron Paul. That isn't Big John saying that. So if
I get you, John. I just don't like that term. Because to get elected, you got to be popular, and populist is twist it with little words.
Yeah, but populist. No. Wait a second. Populist does not mean you are popular. Populist means that all you care about is pandering to the population. You have no principles of your own. You're just saying, "Hey, whatever the people want, I'm going to give them." I have no moral floor for myself.
No, that's my point. I didn't say you're always going to, there's no elected official that has not had aspects of populism in them. It's part of the makeup of how politics works.
I guess it's also the degree, right? Like when
Clinton exactly. did it. It's a degree. But let's get back to the libertarian part. I apologize. Yeah. I took this off track there.
Sure.
Because we're running. I know you like to keep these shows tight.
It's okay.
Whereas my guys drone on. So what happens though? If he does, I mean, you haven't answered the question, and not purposely. I mean, you're not avoiding it. We just got sidetracked. So if he does put a Massey or a Rand Paul, what does this do to the Mises Caucus and their hold? Because my thought is this. If he wins, it doesn't appoint anybody. That's a massive blow to the Mises Caucus. And real quick, John, on your take on some of these old guard leaving, I chuckled because I'm like, that's kind of what they want. The Democrats got rid of the blue collars. The rhinos have been since the 70s trying to get rid of the conservatives out of the party because they want what they call a moderate, which in this essence is just somebody they can turn into a rhino. I mean, that to your audience, they're okay with the old guard leading. But to have a successful party, you got to have both sides fighting, because if not, it just becomes a one-sided nightmare.
Well, I agree with you. And as to what happens to the Mises Caucus, there's two promises that Trump made that supposedly the Mises, Angela McArdle negotiated, which I think is all horseshit. But let's take it at face value. One was the putting a libertarian in the cabinet. And then the other one was freeing Ross Ulbricht. Those are the two major things.
That's right.
So there's two things
tell the audience who Ross is, in case you got some new literature.
Well, Ross is basically a kid who got thrown in prison for the rest of his life. He was the founder of the Silk Road website, so-called dark web, where he basically built the equivalent of an eBay, just a marketplace. And on that marketplace, he accepted Bitcoin. He was one of the first sites, I guess, to take Bitcoin and other crypto. And on that site, the government alleges there was like illegal drug deals going down, people buying hits like assassins and all that fun stuff. I am not as familiar with the case as some others, but the general takeaway from it is that basically they never convicted him of any of that stuff. Most of it came down to alleged money laundering and things of that nature. Anyway, basically the kid's going to spend the rest of his life in jail. He's not a kid anymore. A lot of people, but all libertarians view that as an extreme injustice, that he should be pardoned, much like they did with much the way they feel about Snowden, much the way they felt about Assange. So Free Ross is a libertarian rallying cry for just about every stripe of libertarian. Big Gun,
he only made about $13 million in commissions out of all that. And then you got this guy here, was it Sam Bankman or whatever?
Yeah,
I mean, that's good. The kid loves with him. And what really did him in, I think, is it was an anonymous site. I mean, Tor browser's still around. That's what got him in trouble. But I think deep down, the government wants to control everything.
Yes, that was the libertarian perspective.
You're taking it away from us.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, the government's like, you're taking our control away.
Right.
No go.
So basically, he said Free Ross. Now, if he does those two things, and to what you alluded to earlier, I have no reason to believe Trump's going to keep his promise on that because he never keeps his promises on anything. It's hypocrisy, and I know hypocrisy is a cheap commodity in politics. But for example, who was it that essentially not pardoned, but commuted Assange's sentence?
Nobody.
It was Biden. It was Biden. Biden's administration.
That's right.
But
do you think that was his play for libertarians? Do you think that was his play? Libertarians vote for me, man.
No. Honestly, it may have been. But
I found that
But here's the thing. According to the LNC, it doesn't matter what their motivations were as long as they got it done. So why isn't the LNC saying, hey, support Biden? Unlike Trump, he actually let somebody go that we wanted pardoned, that we wanted commuted. So why not support Biden? He did something that
you
wanted.
Easy. That's easy. I mean, that's easy because at the end of the day, who knows? But like you and I alluded to, it's probably, to kind of get votes in. But at the end of the day, we know what the Democrat Party right now represents.
I'm saying from the perspective of the LNC. I'm not saying.
Oh, again, they should have been happy. They should have been. LNC should have put out a message.
Yeah.
They put out a press release saying, hey, we thank Joe Biden for doing the what's right.
Thanks, Joe Biden. And if he promises to release if he gives us the same promise that Trump did, we'll support him. Why wasn't that issue? Why wasn't that statement made?
Because they haven't even talked to you guys. They don't even care about you guys. If y'all think Trump is using you guys, the Democrats just they view you as like a fly on a turd.
Of course. Yeah. And by the way, so does Trump. Despite all this, so does Trump. Right?
If he keeps his promise, that changes everything.
It does to an extent. You still have the issue of why then are you still in the Libertarian Party? And I think that's going to resonate with a lot of libertarians going forward. Now, for example, you had this infighting that people know. The prior chairman was somebody named Nicholas Sarwark, who led, I think he was in for several years. I'm tempted to say somewhere between 2 and 4 terms.
I think he was in from like 2012 to 2016 or something like that, or 2008 to
2000. Oh, no, he got bounced out when McCardle took over in 20.
Yeah, that's right. He was there for a little while.
He was there for a while. Now, there was a lot of people who claimed he was a so-called left libertarian, which, again, I hold there's no such thing as left and right libertarians. It's just where do you not align with libertarian orthodoxy, right? So,
being the philosopher wanting to stay
of course. But I had to throw that in. But anyway, so Sarwark had his faults. The biggest was supporting William Weld for president, running to be Gary Johnson's running mate in 2016 when the Libertarian Party, by the way, had its highest recorded popular vote was under Sarwark, okay?
Right, John. But that's the whole point, though, is y'all got your best results and you had a moderate Republican and I don't even know what Bill Weld was prior.
No. Bill Weld is a Northeast. He's like a Rockefeller Republican. He's not.
But my point is they weren't libertarian, were they?
Well, Gary Johnson was.
He eventually changed his tune too.
He was an entry level libertarian. Let's put it that way.
He
was very good on economics. Like he reduced the deficit. He cut out regulations. All that fun stuff as a governor in New Mexico. Now, could he sit there and argue Mises and Rothbard and Milton Friedman to you? Probably not. But
Nor Aleppo.
Well, again.
I'm just thinking.
No, I know you are.
Apologize.
But my point is, you had Sarwark in there, and they got rid of him saying, oh, he was too left. So when these guys from the MAGA caucus, I was Freudian slip, the Mises caucus came in, right? Their whole thing was, hey, man, we're going to raise more money. Give us a year or two. We're going to raise more money. We're going to win more elections. We're going to get more sustaining members because we're young. We have the energy. We know how to do the social media thing. And from day one, it's been an unmitigated disaster. They've lost memberships.
That's my point to you, Big John. If he appoints two people, you're going to see money start to come in towards the Libertarian Party.
From who?
Because they're going to see.
That's my point. From who?
They're going to see people. It doesn't matter.
The money. No, but I'm saying, who would be in a position to give them money?
No, I don't. See, you can't sit there and use that as pushback because nobody knows. Got people. We're talking 700,000 in terms of the issues of money losing or winning, gaining. That's in politics. That's insignificant to the LP party today.
Oh, it'd be huge. It'd be huge.
That's huge. Yeah. My point is somebody's going to likely see that. Okay, I'm more libertarian than I am Republican. And I'm a billionaire.
Here's the other thing. And again, this is circumstantial. Take it for what it's worth. I'm not sure that the rank and file of the LP, so if we can use that term, is aligned with Mises. I think the Mises caucus has the loudest people on their side. The same way that the Democrats, the loudest part of their party is the AOC people and the Antifa people and the BLM people. Rank and file Democrats.
Oh, gotcha. So the minority just that screams the loudest. What's the saying?
The squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? Yeah. So I'm not sure that the rank and file of the Libertarian Party is Mises. They're not anarchists. Anyone you talk to, even anarchists, if they're honest with you, they'll tell you, like, we represent 2-5% of the libertarians. Most libertarians are either constitutionalists like Ron Paul, or they're classical liberals like Milton Friedman, or they're maybe minarchists like Big John, right? Like, just reduce. I'm not saying get rid of government. I'm saying reduce it to like this much, right? Just protect the people, prevent, like, enforce the laws, right? Whereas anarchists, like all these people you see flapping their gums, Angela McCardle, Jeremy Kaufman, Dave Smith, allegedly, all these people are anarchists. They're supposed to be no government, no authoritarianism, no this, no. And then all of a sudden it's like, don't let these immigrants into our country. I'm sorry. When did an anarchist ever refer to our country? That's a collectivist position. I mean, if we're really talking about the philosophy of it, like, it's not our country.
Let me ask you this question, Big John, on the history. You know, things evolve, and I'm not saying it in a good or bad way.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm talking about times change. For example, radio gave way to TV. You know, even philosophies are created by usually all those people you mentioned, old white guys in Austria and who were elitists in their own universities, their own world. I'm not saying that as a knock. I'm saying so they came from a certain perspective, but the world does change. And I'm not taking a point here. I'm asking, doesn't libertarianism have to evolve to a degree based on how the world is going?
Well, it depends.
Let me finish because
Sure.
If not, all it is a philosophy that has no place in politics.
Well, there's two things I'd say to that. Like, any political movement is always rooted in political philosophy. I don't care who it is, whether it's socialism, Marxism, conservatism, whatever.
Educate me because I don't know. I'm digressing, people. I apologize, but Big John's one of the smartest guys I know. Where did the roots of conservatism / republicanism come from?
It's funny. Well, republicanism goes back to the Roman Empire.
Okay. So
like the concept of a Senate and all
right,
that.
Right. Okay.
The conservatism, depending on how you define it, but like I think I interviewed Jack Hunter once, and he traces it back to the 50s, right? Like
The Adventure, right? Jack Hunter.
He called himself the Southern Avenger when he was a radio. I think he disavows that now. He wants to forget about that. But but basically, it goes back to, like, look, when you had William F. Buckley, not that he's the founder necessarily, but he's the one who popularized it, but kept it with intellectualism at the same time.
I was about to say, he was a rich, now, I don't know about rich, but he was one of those highfalutin intellectuals. Okay, I don't want to diverge on that.
But my point is this. If something evolves to the point where it no longer resembles what it was intended to be, is that evolution or is that just metamorphosis? And that's what you have to say to yourself. So,
could it be like a combination of both?
Well, then it's not what it was. That's my whole point, right? So if these people who are in the Mises caucus that I call the MAGA caucus now, if I don't begrudge them their beliefs, believe it or not, I don't agree with them at all, but I don't begrudge them. All I'm saying is you shouldn't be part of the Libertarian Party. You should be part of whatever party you think it is that you are, right? Because other than Hans Hermann Hoppe, who seems to be their new philosophical god,
who's he?
He's some Austrian dude. He's been accused of being racist.
And that's right. I know who you're talking about. I'm sorry. Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
He's alive. He lives in Turkey somewhere.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I think they booted him. He used to teach
here.
Yes, Turkey.
You're right. He lives in Turkey now.
He lives in Turkey. And basically, he provides, like, so whenever Kaufman starts screaming about kicking non-whites out of New Hampshire and all that, right? Like, whenever you ask him to explain it, he'll always quote Hoppe. So that somewhere along the line, beating up Democrats, literally, physically, is somehow translates into property rights because Hoppe said so.
Let me ask you this, though. Let me ask you this, because, and I'm not saying these people were racist by hate, but that's an era where they thought it was, they call it Eurocentrism back when I went to college. But in essence, the white race is the better race. I mean, so technically, all those guys started. And I'm not just saying just the libertarians, but every guy who created a philosophy back then, that's how they viewed the world, wasn't
it? But again, if that's your philosophy, which, by the way, was shared by a lot of flat-out racist fascists, like, you know, it's fashionable to call everybody Hitler. But that was Hitler's beliefs. He believed in the superiority of the Aryan race, right? Not just Hitler, by the way. Mao Zedong felt that about his people. Like, we are the truth. The Chinese should be ruling Asia. Whatever.
Exactly.
Right? So it's a racism. It's a bigotry. Okay, I acknowledge it's always existed. But then the point is, why are you bringing that into libertarianism? Where's the mix there? There is no evolution from respect individuals above nations, right? Libertarians are individualists. Anarchists are the ultimate individualists. Right? What was that?
Right.
Getting anarchists to agree on something. What was it Spike Cohen said? It's like trying to herd butterflies on meth while you yourself are on meth. Right? Like, it's just impossible because everybody has their own individualism. Great. You're an anarchist. But I still
remember that example when we talk about drug and legalization.
Yeah, right? So I'm like, okay, but if you're an anarchist, how is it that you think there's national borders? Again, not arguing whether we should be open or closed borders, but if you're an anarchist, show me the evolution that says we need closed borders. Show me the evolution that says...
Is it closed borders or controlled borders? Because there's a difference.
Closed. Someone like Kaufman, who lives in New Hampshire, by the way, advocates that people in Texas should arm themselves and shoot people crossing the Rio Grande.
Now, I'm not defending Kaufman, but here's where you're failing to realize one aspect is not many Americans know this, but the picking trade, what's a trade for when they hire the farmers, hire all the illegals to pick? That goes up the East Coast to New Hampshire. So yes, that does exist. And I'm not defending them. I'm saying when I learned that, because I was the same way, man, you're in North Carolina, what the hell? Then I started read about the tobacco fields in North Carolina and all the illegals would float up from Texas and Florida. Well, Florida more recently.
The point is that an anarchist, and this is where they started to divide amongst themselves, right? So when you look at Karen Ann, when you look at Spike Cohen, who, by the way, Spike Cohen, I think it's fairly common knowledge, he wants nothing to do with the current version of the Mises Caucus, even though he's one of the original guys in there.
Right. I think he falls under the Dave Smith method. Hey, I just don't want to be tainted by that. And I have issues with that. If you want to fight for your party, you got to get into the fight. And I'm not knocking Spike or
Dave. Right. But again, But again, here's the difference. Spy Cohen has not, he went to the national convention, he screwed a smile on his face, and he gave the speech they wanted him to give. But he said,
as did Dave Smith.
Right, as did Dave Smith. But if you notice, the speeches they gave, very different. Dave Smith was there saying, hey, let's listen to Trump. Let's welcome him. Let's do this. Let's do that. He was simping for Trump. When Spike Cohen, during his speech, what did he say? Okay, we tried this, but maybe next time we don't invite non-libertarians to the Libertarian Convention. He didn't mention Trump by name.
And I agree with
RFK by name.
I agree with Spike O'Hardy. It's your party. You should have your members. That's what you want to pin. You know, so Big John, let's get back to the election before we wrap the show up here. What are your predictions? It's going to be close, they say.
I think
back 30 years ago with paper ballots, it'd be a landslide. Not Mondale versus Reagan landslide, but we'd be talking 45, 46. And again, what's my belief to the audience is simple. There's something we call a chain of custody in the military. In police and legal, that's how precious voting is. Take it from somebody who's seen two dictators. So once that is lost, I view it doesn't matter if there's voter fraud. You can't prove when it happens because once that vote is in the system, it's literally impossible to find it. So that said, let's throw that out the window. And let's say it's going to be an up and up because I don't want to bring my beliefs into your show. So let's say it's going to be up and up. How do you see this election playing out?
Look, if you ask me to put money down, it'd probably be on
yes,
Trump.
Yes, because you are a gambler, so I'm not going to let you back out of it.
Yeah, I will put my money on Trump.
Okay, but, now,
but,
oh, go ahead.
But you'd have to give me odds, meaning that I think it's Trump, but I'm also willing to admit that most of my time is spent on Twitter or on X.
X is an echo chamber, as you yourself said.
Is a right-wing echo chamber right now.
Oh, no, it's
so,
a left-wing, too.
No, it's a right-wing echo chamber for me, because that's all I get, right?
So, Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So when I'm willing to accept that it's going to be a close race. Now, the thing I don't know, I honestly don't know, because, look, even before all this, I always thought polling was bullshit. Not because of the math, but because it's so tainted by the questioner. For any political party, right?
I agree.
I've always, you know, when people go to me, yeah, it's bullshit. How can you tell what 300 million people are thinking? Well, for 500 responses, no, the math works. That part is not bullshit.
Exactly.
What's bullshit is the way they ask questions that are open ended, that they guide you to an answer, right? So that aside, what am I thinking? I don't know what's going on in those battleground states. Like, look, last time. Trump people don't want to hear this. Joe Jorgensen probably cost Trump the election. She took away the spread that in those swing states like Wisconsin, Arizona, Michigan, like she beat the spread between Biden and Trump. Now, whether I think they would have voted for Trump or not is a different issue. Trump thinks they would have voted for Trump if Joe Jordan.
You know, you're right, but that's 2016 or 2020, though. So you're right. Saying, though, this one, because I don't see that happening only because of what the Mises Caucus has done this go round. So well, that brings me to my next question to you.
What they tried, yeah.
Yeah, but that brings me to my next question to you. And this is a tough question because you're going to have Mike Tremont on, so I don't want to put you in the spot.
Yeah.
Give me your take. Did they hit 1%
yes.
or not?
Okay. I think they surprise people. I think they surprise people.
And I'm not picking a fight, Mike.
No.
I think it's very difficult because of what your own party has done to you.
But I'm wondering how much of that is now blowing back because again, this is all theoretical, right? If I'm correct that the rank and file Libertarian Party is not anarchists, is not Mises Caucus. You just hear from the Mises Caucus a lot. That means there's a silent majority in the LP that will go vote for Chase Oliver in the states that he's on the ballot. New York is a lost cause, right? Because I have to go write him in. Anybody in New York has to write in Chase Oliver and Mike Tremont. I can't vote for them because of New York's oppressive ballot access. But they're on the ballot in 47 states. in those states where they're on the ballot, if you're a libertarian and like me, you can't bring yourself to vote for Trump or Harris, then my guess is you'll vote for Chase Oliver. You're not staying home. The
anarchist if you're a libertarian, you mean?
If you're a libertarian.
Yeah, gotcha.
Okay. Right? So the Mises Caucus is saying they think they have enough Mises people in the party that those people will either vote for – that they'll vote for Trump, essentially. Right?
Right.
Meaning that they're taking away votes from Oliver to vote for right. Trump. Now, again, I don't know. My guess is I'd like to believe in the good nature of people. So I'd like to think that those libertarians are not the majority of the party. The majority of the party is people who are going to vote libertarian, who still see Chase Oliver and Mike Termott as reasonable libertarians, that even if they disagree on one or two things with them, they are good libertarians on 90, 95% of the issues. Let's not focus on the 5, 10% that we disagree on. And let's focus on the fact that they're against war. They're for ending the Fed. They're against mandates. You know, they're ending funding of foreign wars. All that good stuff that goes into being a libertarian. Right. And I want to remind people, the god of the Mises Caucus, Ron Paul himself, has said several times since 2016, Donald Trump is not a libertarian. He is a Republican. He is an authoritarian. Those Mises people would be well reminded that their philosophical savior, the guy that Dave Smith says to this day, Ron Paul is the greatest human being on this planet. And he's the one who got me into the Mises, the Ron Paul revolution. Guess what, Dave? Your leader never met a point in time where he would have pulled the lever for Donald Trump.
But as you were, I will defend Dave Smith. He didn't say you have to. He says if you vote your conscience is what he said in that tweet.
He said vote for Trump. He said I'm voting for Trump, and he said I cannot vote for Chase Oliver.
He
has not proven that he is a libertarian of principle. And I'm like, okay.
I got to be honest. I don't know if Ron Paul, who would he vote for? Would he vote? Would he just stay home? Oh, and real quick to the audience, I disagree with Big John. Don't stay home because there's a lot of under ballot conservatives and libertarians that are good people who deserve your vote. So if you don't like POTUS,
agreed.
Don't vote for him, but get out to the polls.
Yeah.
Because
I'm just
somebody who's seen two dictators, damn it, your vote does matter.
You're right.
I focus on a lot. I do a lot of research down those local races now because there's not a lot of info out there. So you really got to research.
Yeah, you're right, William. My telling people to stay home is in response to the fallacy of your vote being wasted. If you think your vote is going to be wasted, don't give it to someone you disagree with. Give it instead to someone you believe in. All right, William, listen, before we go, just wanted to say to everyone again, just want to remind everyone, Tuesday night, election night, as William alluded to, we're going to have our good friend, Mike Termott. He's on the ticket, everyone, in 47 states. Go vote for Chase Oliver and Mike Termott. But we'll have Mike on 10:30 Eastern on election night to live stream the election night results and reactions from Mike. I'm incredibly, William, I don't think when we started this company that we thought we'd actually have a major party VP candidate sitting with us on election night talking about the results. I think we've come a long way, my friend.
That is true, but to toot my horn, I knew we'd get people like this. I just didn't realize we'd get them on election night. So that's a big coup for you, Big John. And to the audience, let's close this out. We've had an exciting show.
Sure.
I'd like to think I was able to get Big John to own up to some of those beliefs he has. But you can find this show, Free for All, and another show that Big John does is his Big Questions with Big John, and he has quite a bit of libertarian interviews, including every POTUS candidate for the party. Now, that's a little bit old, but you can see the degree and quality candidates he gets on. You can find that at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as our social media platforms, YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora, under the handle Grumblings Media. Big John, any final words before we close it out here?
No, everyone, thank you for joining. And William, thank you. It's good to take a night off and not be the host. It's always good to not have to prepare as deeply. I just responded to your question. So thank you for doing that. I knew you were busy, but thank you for taking some time out of your schedule. And everyone, as much as William pimped this show and the big questions with Big John, let me return the favor. Tomorrow night and every Friday night, join William and his co-hosts. Usually it's with Annette Ross and G. Mangani. Join them for Fired Up. If you're a conservative, if you're like the Mises Caucus and you're a conservative Republican, tune in to Fired Up every Friday night to catch William and his co-hosts and his guests. Friday night, again, 10 p.m. Eastern, Fired Up, 7 p.m. out California time where William is. So everyone tune in tomorrow night. And on that note, everybody, peace.